can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how to clean your home or apartment or car when you don't want to use those frequently expensive and very toxic chemicals. Natural substances to clean everything hygienically. Garlic cures 100% of a condition. Cilantro and chlorella can remove 80% of the heavy metals in your body within 42 days. A study links high cholesterol to increased risks of breast cancer. That's not good. And a lot more. We have a lot of important studies. And for those of you who tune in each day or download the program at your convenience, all of the information shared comes from quality, independent scientific sources. Today, there will be no guest because it's commentary day. Lots of commentaries, my own and others. For example, we're going to take a look at public health issues, including 131 ways for an infant to die. An eight-week-old dies after getting a vaccine. A report from Vaccine Liberation Army on that. We're also going to take a look at the neurotube birth defects. They're occurring at a 400% national rate near Hanford nuclear site. Interesting, because Paul DiRienzo just did a four-part series that I was listening to on Nutrice Leeds' program. She's doing, by the way, very well, for those of you who used to hear her for 22 years on WBAI in the afternoon doing talkback. She has an audience three times larger now, and they'll be doing a lot of investigative reporting. So Paul was on there talking about Hanford, new stuff. Well, this is even the newest. So this is brand new. Also from Dr. Joseph Marcola. Last week I did a program on what's wrong with Obamacare. But it's really not about Obamacare specifically. The larger issue is what's wrong with our entire way of approaching disease or health in the United States. And I addressed why it costs so much to have an operation, let's say your tonsils taken out in the United States versus in Belgium. And it's, you know, astronomical differences. It's the entire system that's been gamed, and the public has been misled and lied to. So we're going to expand on that today. We're going to take a look at the U.S. health care. It is the most expensive but worst performing of any industrialized nation. And these are the government's own statistics. Also today, I'm going to take a look at issues that the media does not cover for some reason. We do. I'm going to look at a new memo that was uncovered and given to David Corn at Mother Jones. It shows that Henry Kissinger gave the green light for Argentina's dirty war. Well, that led to 30,000 people being killed. Also, the DEA agent and Justice Department official testify in court that the U.S. backed this Sinaloa drug cartel for 12 years. So let's get this right. The United States government backed the murderous Mexican drug cartel for a decade. Now, I just read this morning that there were 85,000 people minimally killed in Mexico since this last 6-7 years down there. We were a part of that. We contributed to it. Well, then why are we throwing people in the United States in prison for long terms for having marijuana, and yet we're backing the drug cartel that's causing this? It's really strange. I'll give you the details on that also. And a Chilean court, you won't see this in any of the American media, rules that the U.S. played a key role in the Pinochet murder of Americans by Barry Gray. We'll tell you about that. Now, all those have something in common. It shows that the United States government, as part of its policy for decades, has been intervening in Latin and South American countries and Mexico With impunity. Why? Last night on 60 Minutes, they were doing a segment on a man who evidently was making a lot of money off a scheme. And it was a former assistant director of the FBI who said, you know, in the United States, you know, we obey the laws. And we don't care who you are or what clothes you wear or color of your skin. If you break the law, you know, you're going to be held accountable. He's kidding. We never go after the right people. We are notorious throughout the world of having two sets of laws. Those that Wall Street, powerful people, oligarchs, government officials, CIA, Homeland Security, SWAT teams, everybody who's on the inside of that power circle, they get away with murder. Anyone else, then you have to face the music. So I'm going to deal with that. Have you noticed how terrible the reporting is on the genocide that the Ukrainian government is, with America's full blessing, is doing to the Russians, or Russian-speaking citizens in the Ukraine? And yet what we condemned other countries for, we're now participating in. Just the contradictions. Also, you wonder why kids today just don't seem as bright as previous generations. Well, we have from a school teacher some 16-year-olds quiz. This is a test they took, and I'll share some of the answers, and you think that can't be happening. It is. Also, who gets our foreign aid? Foreigners? Nope. U.S. corporations. Mike Shedlock from Global Economic Analysis. Yeah. And the ones you wouldn't want to get this money, like Monsanto. I'll tell you about that. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. One of the most toxic places you'll ever be is in your own home. And part of the reason is because of what we hadn't paid attention to. Where did the carpet come from? Does it have formaldehyde? Was it treated to prevent mold or rot or fungus? Yeah. What about the desk and the bed and the bedboard and the cabinets in the kitchen? Frequently particle board glued together with resins that are extremely toxic and that you may not smell them, but they're there in the air and they can adversely affect you. All the cleaning material we use is frequently extremely toxic, but you want to have a clean home, so what do? It's not difficult. You don't want to expose yourself or children to the dangers of environmental cleansers because they've never been tested. You don't want the propylene glycol and the isopropanol and the ethylene glycol in hexyl. You don't want that stuff. You don't want ammonium hydroxide. Yeah, you find that in lemon pledge. You don't want butane and propane and isobutane and silicones derived from petroleum. So you want something that's natural, that's not going to hurt you or your family. Here's how you do it. Baking soda. Simple baking soda. It's really good. It's non-toxic. And you can make a paste and cleans grout in your bathroom and kitchen. You can clean old porcelain in a tub. Even deodorizes your cat litter box. And in fact, if you rub it around your sink, it can make it look almost new. And it can clean up stains from tea and plastic containers. It can clean your brushes and combs with baking soda. And in fact, you can even add a little bit to your shampoo and rinse away residues that were left behind. So the dirtiest thing in a kitchen is the sponge. People forget every time you use it and you wipe something, it's dirty. You should always throw your sponge into some hydrogen peroxide, alcohol, a little diluted bleach, and that'll sterilize it. You can reuse it again, then you can throw it in your washing machine. But people forget. They just keep using that sponge over and over again. Don't. When I go into a restaurant, unless there's a clean tablecloth, which there generally isn't, especially in the nice food restaurants, I always put a napkin on the table. And then I put one on my seat. generally no one pays attention and can't see what I'm sitting on. And why? Because all you have to do is watch what happens when someone gets up from a meal. They go over, they remove the plates and silverware, and they come over with a dirty cloth that they've been using all day on all the other tables, and they wipe it. Well, let's see, they remove the particulate matter, that's good, and they could have left behind hepatitis, herpes, all forms of E. coli and bacteria, and then so you get your silverware on that. That means it gets in your mouth. So, simple little thing. Well, in the house, it's the sponge. So clean your sponges. Then you have hydrogen peroxide. Everyone should always keep hydrogen peroxide. I use it in conjunction with baking soda. And it's a great non-toxic cleaning agent. It'll help get rid of minerals. It can mix with baking soda, and it can clean real stubborn stains. It can clean out your stove. So hydrogen peroxide, vinegar, just simple vinegar. It's naturally antibacterial. It can get rid of molds and dust. In fact, it's you can clean most of your house from your windows to any kind of mold. And if you get some resistant mold, then use tea tree oil, wild oregano oil, on a cloth, sponge cloth, and vinegar, and you put it on, let it sit overnight, and then wipe it off. You've killed that bacteria, the mold. So that's good. Hot water, something as simple as soap and water. Don't use the antibacterial pump soaps, just regular soap, an oatmeal soap, any kind of soap is good. Get one that doesn't have any chemicals in it, and it'll can sanitize and kill germs just as effectively as anything else out there that's being used. Olive oil, yeah. In fact, it can help keep from stripping floors and furniture and other natural beauty. It's great for wood floor cleaners. People might not have thought of that, but it's true. In fact, recently I cleaned the wood floors of my home by putting down some olive oil with one of those little pads, white pads, clean, made out of cotton. And you think your floor is clean, and then you go to clean it, and you look at the bottom of it, and wow, there it is, all that dirt. It's non-toxic, and it can help repair scratches in furniture. It's easy to clean everything. And then something as simple as 100% organic Castile soap. Castile. Castile. Castile soap. It's versatile. It's non-toxic. And you can clean almost anything. It takes the place of a liquid plumbing chemicals. So those are things you can use in your home that are not going to cause you a problem. Garlic. Garlic should be on everyone's menu. Here's the latest from the International Journal of Dermatology. Quote, a study entitled Healing Effect of Garlic Extract on Warts and Corns shows that garlic extract is good for all warts and all corns. Now, we know that warts are caused by the human papilloma virus and corns by pressure or friction. And most people going to dermatologists have these. They took peeled garlic, and so they then applied it to all these warts and corns, and 100% were benefited, 100% cures. They either used a water extract of garlic or a fat-soluble extract of garlic. It was that simple. So, antiviral. Garlic is strongly antiviral. It is also, by the way, anti-tumor. And garlic has been found to destroy a wide range of cancer cells. In fact, there's over 160 diseases garlic has been studied to have potential therapeutic value. Over a dozen different forms of cancer it helps. And that's why the people I'm working with who have cancer, I suggest a juice each day. It's diluted. But you do put a lot of raw garlic in it. And then on top of that, you put other things like ginger. You juice ginger. And then lemon. And then you put Manuka honey in. And bee propolis. And astragalus. And curcumin. And then you dilute all that with about 16 ounces of green apple juice. And you drink that throughout the day. That is a good juice for people with any kind of cancer. It also is very good for building up your immune system. Now, something else that's good for you is chlorella. But there's also cilantro, which is a form of parsley. In a particular study, it was able to remove 80% of the heavy metals from the body within 42 days using in combination. So here's what we know. Quote, this is the study. Many health practitioners use synthetic chelating agents such as DMPS, DMSA, EDTA, and others to mobilize and eliminate heavy metals from the body. There are advantages and disadvantages to using these. One advantage is the power of their mobilizing activity. They are quick to mobilize and eliminate certain metals in the body. But this may place a huge burden on the body detoxification system. End quote. But when you use cilantro and chlorella together, quote, it mobilizes more toxins than it can carry out of the body. And it can flood the body's connective tissue, and it takes these out. So you want to make sure you use them in combination and then get them out. Here's what cilantro and chlorella can do. Chlorella is antiviral. It binds to dioxin, other environmental toxins. It helps stimulate detoxification function. It improves glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. It helps at getting rid of heavy metals throughout the body. And it's a methyl repair nervous system, damaged neurons, which happen when you have metal poisoning. For children in particular who have autism spectrum disorder diagnosis, definitely want to use chlorella and cilantro. It contains the most easily absorbed form of B12 and B6. It's high in amino acids. It's ideal for vegetarians. Chlorella is able to open cells, which help them detoxify. It restores healthy gut flora. So it also is highly effective as a metal toxin binding agent mobilizer. It's anti-inflammatory. Chlorella increases the good HDL cholesterol and decreases the bad LDL cholesterol. It prevents bloating. It helps heal urinary tract infections. It eases hormonal swings during menopause and menstruation. It can reduce nausea. It's good fiber. Fights anemia. It's good in iron and magnesium. Reduces minor swelling, helps your liver. So all the good things it can do. That's chlorella. A lot of you are getting your chlorella now. Then there's a good study showing high cholesterol increases your risk of breast cancer. This is at Aston University School of Medicine, United Kingdom. Quote, a new study recently presented at the Frontiers in Cardiovascular Biology meeting in Barcelona, Spain, suggests that women who have high cholesterol may be at a higher risk of developing breast cancer. Using a statistical model, the researchers estimated that women with high cholesterol were 1.64 times, that's 164% more likely to develop breast cancer than women with normal cholesterol levels. So, get your cholesterol down. Diet, supplements, exercise can do that. And finally, what are the health benefits of cantaloupes? We've gotten a lot of emphasis now on watermelon, but cantaloupes are up there as well. According to Medical News Today, cantaloupes and other melons are the quintessential snack, and they can help ward off dehydration. They are low-maintenance desserts, meaning they're not loaded with sugar. And there's a lot of good nutrition in a cantaloupe, low in calories and high in good quality fiber, lots of vitamin A and vitamin C, has an abundance of antioxidants, including choline and beta-carotene, all of which protect us against a range of diseases. And cantaloupes also are commonly known as muskmelons, mushmelons, rock melons, Persian melons. They're all in the same family, along with honeydew and watermelons. But specifically, they can help with age-related macular degeneration, asthma, lower your blood pressure, help prevent cancer, digestion enhancement, help with hydration, turn down inflammation, and help with healthier skin and hair. So that's important. I'm Gary Knoll. Today is our day to deal with commentaries. Now let's take a look at the United States healthcare system. I'm going to quote from Dr. Joseph Morcola. Here's what he says. The article is entitled U.S. Healthcare, Most Expensive and Worst Performing. Well, that's a double negative, but that's what we have. And you can listen to the archives of the show special we did last week on this very topic. Quote, American health care is the most expensive in the world, with 17.7% of gross domestic product spent on health care. This is significantly more than other developed countries. Australia, for comparison, spends 8.9%. For the costs involved, you might assume Americans enjoy the best health care in the world, but this would be a mistaken assumption. According to a new report released by the Commonwealth Fund, the U.S. ranks last across access and equity to efficiency. And then you look at other countries that are much better: United Kingdom, Canada, the Netherlands, Sweden, Switzerland, France, New Zealand, Australia, Germany, and Norway. Wonder why? Well, we spend $8,500 per person in the United States. That's more than double the $3,400 per person in the United Kingdom, which was first in healthcare. So it's interesting when I hear people attacking Canadian healthcare or French healthcare or English healthcare, because, well, I wouldn't want to wait forever to get a procedure. Well, first of all, that's not true. If you doubt me, let me introduce you to the million vets who have post-traumatic stress disorder, Gulf War syndrome, who've been waiting for years. In fact, the one complaint that I found when last I interviewed a year ago, a lot of vets, there were probably, I'm going to guess, 3,000 or 4,000 that were waiting quietly in line to go into what is called a stand down. Now, stand down, they take a big field and they put up tables and tents, and then it's all voluntary. The government doesn't have anything to do with it. It's actually done right. And then the vets go in, and there's a table for boots or shoes, and there's a table for sleeping bags and items that people need every day. There's a dentist to check your teeth. Won't do anything about it, but at least he'll tell you what you need and give you a prescription. There's a medical doctor. There was a chiropractor. And the people were extremely appreciative. There was a church there that gave out some free food to the people. There was a barber who cut their hair. It was a very inspiring day because I saw vets from the Korean War, the Vietnam War, who had volunteered their time to come and help these homeless vets. Now, I'd already spent time in the woods with them, seeing how they lived. And they're living at a very primal level. No water, no toilets, no sanitation, no cooking. They're just literally in nature. Now, you might not think, well, that couldn't be so bad. It's in the east coast of Florida, near Cape Canaveral. Yeah, same place that I found in a park, not a park that you walk around in or picnic in. This was just like a community area. I saw a bunch of cars. I was told to go there because you'll find something interesting there, Gary. What am I going to find? Well, go and see for yourself. So as I approached in the back of this SUV, I saw that the people were around the hood, which is open, and there on the radiator, they were heating some noodle soup for two teenagers. And that's how they were living. That wasn't the interesting part. the interesting part was they were both engineers, had been for a long time in the NASA program at Cape Canaveral. But when they downsized, these people waited too late, didn't get out, then thought if they did get out, they'd get another job at the same rate they had seniority. They didn't, until one day they lost it all, home, and now they were living here with nothing. And that was like most of the people in that park. But in another place, these were vets. It was interesting how the people who were white-collar, upper-mobile, highly educated, were homeless in one area, whereas the downtrodden financially were homeless in another area. But they were all homeless. In fact, the most unique circumstance I filmed that day, you'll see this in the upcoming feature film that'll be out in about 2 months. I'll announce it for all of our listeners out in California. I'm going to come out there and do a whole week because I'm qualifying it for the Academy Awards. It's important. People have to see this. It's going to be a feature film, but then there's going to be a 52 one-hour segment series. I'll either put it on television or I'll put it on the Internet. We have enough people on the Internet that can see it. It's going to get shown because some of these stories are just powerful. And one of them was that I get down in the street and I shoot up past this senior citizen who's sitting on a curb, and I focus past him and I focus on a plaque on a building. And it's a university, and it's this multi-million-dollar gymnasium besides a science center. And it's his plaque, it's his picture. He put up the money, that tens of millions of dollars, to build both. Yet he's living in a garage. He has no other place to stay. He lost everything. And I said to him, well, universities generally hold a lot of apartments for faculty. Surely if you gave $100 million to university, they'd give you an apartment. Nope. Tried that. I thought, well, what kind of ethics and morality are we dealing with here? Well, that's what's happening everywhere. In any case, so here you have these vets, and they're all saying the same thing. They're waiting 2 and 3 years to get into a VA hospital. The government doesn't care about them, and because they're suffering from what they cannot prove is a wartime condition, post-traumatic stress disorder, Gulf War syndrome, they're not being covered at all. So anyhow, so when we talk about our healthcare systems, why aren't the people who are defending the for-profit-making pharmaceutical industry, hospital associations, and insurance industries, why aren't they looking at the reality of how many people are not covered under any of the systems we have? Because I can surely show a lot of these people. So we're just spending a ton of money, and we're getting, outside of emergency medicine, we're getting poor care as a result of this. Here are the final reports. Quote, the claim that the United States has the best healthcare system in the world is clearly not true. To reduce costs and improve outcomes, the U.S. must adopt and adapt lessons from effective healthcare systems both at home and around the world. Those were the findings. People in the United States go without needed health care because of cost, more often than people do in any other of the countries that were reviewed. Americans were the most likely to say that they had access problems related to cost. Now, while U.S. patients report rapid access to specialized healthcare services, they are less likely to report rapid access to primary care. U.S. ranks last in indicators of efficiency. The U.S. has poor performance on measures of national health expenditures and administrative cost. One-third or more of lower-income adults in the United States said they went without needed care because of cost in the past year. So even if you get some coverage, you may have a copay, and if your copay is more than what your income is, then you're not going to get the service. So here's the bottom line. Why in the world do we have this high cost? Well, it's because we don't have any preventative health care whatsoever in the United States. Our Surgeon General, U.S. Public Health Service, Congress has has said they don't really care about the health of Americans. They only care about the health of profits for corporations exploiting Americans. We don't have an emphasis upon eating a whole foods, living food, organic diet. That would help heart disease, cancer, diabetes, but we don't emphasize it. We don't tell people that you shouldn't be consuming unhealthy fats. To the contrary, almost all the ads are for unhealthy fats and gigantic portions of disease-causing food. We don't tell people to stay clear of artificially sweetened beverages, including those with artificial sweeteners and high fructose corn syrup. We don't talk about having a fresh glass of, in the hot weather, of homemade lemonade. Want to sweeten it? Use a little Manuka honey. We don't get people out to exercise enough. People are exercising, it's because of their own motivation. And we don't get enough vitamin D in our body. We're suffering from multiple nutrient deficiencies. Our diet is heavily demineralized. We don't tell people to be careful of what is on their food or in their food or in their living environment. Hence, there are 80,000 man-made chemicals. Not one of them has been tested in its synergistic impact on long-term study on people's health. Not one. That's the power of lobbying. But it isn't, is it? Because you can't lobby someone against their own ethics and consciousness. You can't. If you think you can, try lobbying any of the Chris Hedges, Rabbi Michael Lerner. Lobby the people who have Ralph Nader. Lobby him. And see if he can, for a price, for something that benefits him personally, see if he's willing to change his mind so he can get that reward. It's not going to happen. These people are people of high levels of consciousness. So it's not really the lobbying. It's the lack of ethics and the people who are then using their positions of power to be compromised. They're willing accomplices in all this. In fact, if you go to Washington, D.C., very little work is actually done in any office in Washington, D.C. It's all about planning for how you're going to use the system. And they do it, all of them. I was just thinking about this last night. What came into my mind was the film I did down in Washington and up in New York again, with Ralph Nader. I filmed him about three or four times. And just as an aside off camera, I said, Ralph, what do you think was behind that Bill Maher and Michael Moore getting down on their knees and begging you to get out of presidential politics for the betterment of the party? And he just smiled. And he said, I have no idea what was in their mind. Well, I do. And here's my thought on this. And for all of the corporate liberals and Democrats, you know who you are. Nation Magazine, you're at the top of this. Mother Jones, you're right beside him, and a lot of others. You don't speak for those of us who are independent thinkers, so stop pretending you do. Secondly, let's just get a few things clear. I realize you're sometimes caught up in the fog of your own narcissistic ideals, and you think that they're right, but how can you have a publisher or top person in a magazine that also sits on the Council on Foreign Relations and is married to another Council on Foreign Relations person and say that democratic principles are what you live by? These are elitists. If Ralph Nader had been elected president, what would be different today? And that's the only way you can judge this. Here's what would be different. We would not have had the National Defense Authorization Act. We would not have had the Patriot Act. We would have not had any of the domestic spying. We wouldn't have 17 intelligence agencies looking into everything we do, categorizing it. We wouldn't be building detention camps for over 10 million people. We wouldn't have out of all the money being spent around the world, we wouldn't be giving this enormous amount to the countries that then use it to repress democratic movements in their own countries, like Egypt for all those decades, three decades, under Mubarak and others. We wouldn't have hit teams. We wouldn't have a shredded constitution. You would have habeas corpus. You would have freedom of speech, not free speech zones behind a guarded area away from where anyone can see or hear you, we wouldn't have 40,000 SWAT team incursions last year alone. We wouldn't have a nation out of control. We wouldn't have the privatization of our educational system by Bill Gates and others. We wouldn't have the effort to privatize Social Security. We wouldn't have gone into Iraq. Let me just think. That alone would have saved 1.6 million Iraqis' lives and 5 million from being displaced. It wouldn't have allowed Iraq to become a toxic environmental graveyard, because that's all it is now, because of depleted uranium. We wouldn't have spurred on and motivated by financing our good terrorists against bad terrorists. Gee whiz, did anyone at Fox who has an IQ above 7, sorry, I don't think there is anyone there, actually think that maybe it wouldn't be a good idea to start selecting the best terrorists, the moderate terrorist, the kind terrorist? They don't really behead you before they give you Novocaine, so you don't feel it. And this is the mindset of the people all over the media, including the New York Times, in my opinion. We wouldn't have had that. We wouldn't have had 12 years in Afghanistan. We wouldn't have been sponsoring the invasion of Libya. Boy, that destabilized the countries in the whole area. We wouldn't have been behind in arming and funding the overthrow of the Syrian regime. We wouldn't have been manipulating governments for wealth of private corporations. We wouldn't have given British Petroleum a pass on criminal charges. The people responsible would have gone to jail. We wouldn't have allowed Wall Street to have bankrupted us because there had been a constant effort to keep bubbles from occurring. There would have been a head of the Federal Reserve who is from a populist perspective, someone like a Dr. Alan Brown, not the chump change for intellects they have in the last three from Yellen and all the others. Bernanke, no. You'd have had real economists. You wouldn't have a student debt problem because you would have had more emphasis upon public education. You'd have a single health care payer, so we wouldn't be losing 40 to 50,000 Americans dead a year. You wouldn't be bankrupting people. You wouldn't have government overreach. We'd be cleaning up our water. We wouldn't have massive amounts of degradation, especially from clear-cut coal mines in West Virginia, Appalachia, Kentucky, Tennessee. You wouldn't have that. No, you would have real detente. You'd be looking at how you can solve problems. We wouldn't have a corporate welfare state. You would have had taxes on algorithm trading on Wall Street. You'd have a balanced budget. You wouldn't have given corporate America $21 trillion in free money. You wouldn't have had to get out of jail free to all the major corporate criminals. That's how the world would look if you had elected Ralph Nader. But you were too smart, weren't you? You were the wise asses. You were the ones who go to those cocktail parties and just can't stop telling people how brilliant you are. Well, you weren't brilliant. You were filled with your own hubris and conceit and lack of ability to cooperate or understand or even care about anyone else's ideas except your own. And as a result, you supported Kerry. Well, take a look at your candidate. We now see what he's doing as Secretary of State, and that's what he would have done as president. He'd have been no different. He'd just been a bigger version of George Bush. And look at your man Clinton, and look at your man Obama, and look at your woman. I don't know if it's genetic or whether it's something conditional, but the fact that you're a Democrat or a liberal in the corporate sense doesn't mean that you should support the party. Anyone who I know has a conscience has long ago said, we no longer want to be a part of you. And they're becoming independent. And take a look, without anyone paying attention, the largest single group of voters today is not Democrat or Republican, it is independent, 44%. And a lot of those are progressives because they just got sick of being lied to, manipulated, and conned, where everything is slogans and sleaze. Yeah. And dynasties of ego. So that's what I see today. And when you think, had you just made one right choice? But you didn't. Could you imagine what this would have been like had we had a Jill Stein, a true populist? What was wrong with her? 67% of women are voters are women. Well, she's a woman. She's a medical doctor, Harvard trained. Brilliant woman. She's a populist. That scares you, especially if you have to look towards your corporate leaders for what's real. I'm Gary Nall. Now to show you our educational system. This is from Lisa Frank. Thank you. The following questions were set in last year's GED examination. Now, these are genuine questions from 16-year-olds. Name four seasons: salt, pepper, mustard, vinegar. What guarantees may a mortgage company insist on? Answer: if you're buying a house, they will insist that you're well endowed. In a democratic society, how important are elections? Answer: very important. Sex can only happen when a male gets an election. What are steroids? Things for keeping carpets still on the stairs. What happens to your body as you age? When you get old, so do your bowels, and you get intercontinental. What happens to a boy when he reaches puberty? Answer: he says goodbye to his boyhood and looks forward to his adultery. What is artificial insemination? When a farmer does it to the bull instead of the cow. How are the main 20 parts of the body categorized? The body is consisted of three parts: the brainium, the borax, and the abdominal cavity. The brainium contains the brain, the borax contains the heart and the lungs, and the abdominal cavity contains the five bowels. What is the fibula? A small eye. What does varicose mean? Nearby. What is the most common form of birth control? Most people prevent contraception by wearing a condominium. What is a seizure? A Roman emperor. What is a terminal illness? When you get sick at the airport. What does the word benign mean? Benign is what you'll be after you be eight. What is a turbine? Something an Arab or a sheik wears on his head. And those are just the kind of smart ones. Whoa, you wouldn't believe the dumb ones. And those are the people going to college, and those are the people who are going to be stepping into positions of power. Well, not the most optimistic. Now, let's hold the FBI, the CIA, our government accountable, and the media, most importantly, for not reminding Americans that we had spent over 40 years destabilizing the entire social movements, labor movements, people's movements, move back to the farm movements all over Central and South America. We were behind it. Proof of it? Proof is overwhelming. This is from Barry Gray. Quote, Chilean court rules U.S. played a key role in Pinochet murder of Americans. A Chilean court issued a ruling that the commander of the U.S. military forces in Chile played a pivotal role in the murder of two U.S. citizens following the September 1973 coup that overthrew the elected government and installed General Augusto Pinochet as dictator. Quote, the military intelligence services of the United States had a fundamental role in the creation of the murders of the two American citizens in 1973, providing Chilean military officers with the information that led to their deaths. That was according to the judge, Zepeda. The ruling went on to say that the murders were part of a secret U.S. information gathering operation carried out by the U.S. military group, in Chile on the political activities of American citizens in the United States and Chile. Judge Zepeda found that the U.S. Navy Captain Ray Davis provided his Chilean liaison, Monsalve, with information casting the two Americans, 31-year-old journalist Charles Horman, 24-year-old student Frank Tarugi, as left-wing subversives. The contact passed on the information to the intelligence department of the Chilean Joint Chiefs of Staff, which ordered the men's arrest. Horman, whose abduction and murder are depicted in the award-winning 1982 film Missing, was seized from his home by soldiers on September 17th, taken to San Diego's National Stadium, which had been turned by the U.S. back junta into a detention, torture, and executioner center. 10,000 people were incarcerated at the stadium in the immediate aftermath of the coup. And so it went. And then, of course, he was killed. But they were all killed, by the way, all these people. And then it goes on to talk about how they hit his body into a wall in the stadium. It was discovered a month later. Judge Zepeda also upheld the decision to charge retired Chilean Army Colonel Pedro Espinzillo with the murders and Rafael Gonzalez, a former civilian counterintelligence agency, as an accomplice in Horman's death. Captain Davis, acting on behalf of the U.S. military, the CIA, and the administration of President Richard Nixon, was undoubtedly aware that in fingering Horman and Turuji, he was condemning them to death. The Chilean military was at the time hunting down and killing thousands of the supporters of the trade unions and left-wing students' movements. Then it goes on to talk about it. The State Department knew about all this. The president knew about it. The members of Congress that sit on the National Intelligence Committees knew about it. Well, murder doesn't have a statute of limitations. So why don't we take a look at all the murders of innocent civilians or activists and hold the people accountable? Why not? I'd like your thoughts on that, please. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Now, following in that is this. This is from David Korn, Mother Jones. Quote, new memo. Henry Kissinger gave the green light for Argentina's dirty war. More evidence emerges that former Secretary of State secretly approved a government killing spree that resulted in about 30,000 dead. Only a few months ago, Henry Kissinger was dancing with Stephen Colbert in a funny bit on the latter's Comedy Central show. But for years, the former Secretary of State has sidestepped judgment for his complicity in horrific human rights abuses abroad. And a new memo has emerged that provides clear evidence that in 1976, Kissinger gave Argentina's neo-fascist military group the green light for a dirty war it was conducting against civilian and militant leftists that resulted in the disappearance, that is, the deaths of 30,000 people. In April 1977, Pat Derrien, a one-time civil rights activist whom President Jimmy Carter had recently appointed Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights, met with U.S. Ambassador in Buenos Aires, Robert Hill. A memo recording the conversation had been unearthed by Martin Edward Anderson, who in 1987 first reported Kissinger had told the Argentine generals to proceed with their terror campaign against leftists. The memo notes that Hill told Derrien about a meeting Kissinger held with Argentinian Foreign Minister Guzzetti the previous June. What the two men discussed was revealed in a 2004 when the National Security Archives obtained and released the secret memorandum of conversation for that get-together. Guzzetti, according to the document, told Kissinger, quote, our main problem in Argentina is terrorism. Kissinger replied, quote, if there are things that have to be done, you should do them quickly, but you must get back quickly to normal procedures, end quote. In other words, go ahead with your killing crusade against the leftists. The new document shows that Kissinger was even more explicit in encouraging the Argentine generals. The memo recounts Hill describing the Kissinger-Guzzetti discussion this way. The Argentines were very worried that Kissinger would lecture them on human rights. Guzzetti and Kissinger had a very long breakfast, but the secretary did not raise the subject. Finally, Guzzetti did. Kissinger asked how long it will take you, the Argentinians, to clean up the problem. Guzzetti replied that it would be done by the end of the year. Kissinger approved. In other words, Ambassador Hill explained, Kissinger gave the Argentinians the red light. That's a damning statement. A U.S. ambassador saying a Secretary of State had egged on a repressive regime that was engaged in a killing spree. And so it goes. Why isn't he being held accountable? He's always welcome in the White House. He's a friend of every president, every member of Congress, the major media. You help support the killing of 30,000 people. You think that maybe you should be held accountable. We are having a hard time holding people accountable. This is from Washington Blog. American government-backed murderous Mexican drug cartel for more than a decade. DEA agent and Justice Department officials testify in court that the U.S. backed the Sinaloa drug cartel between 2000 and 2012. The U.S. government has, at least at some times in some parts of the world, long protected drug operations. And an opium production is an all-time high under American occupation in Afghanistan. Something similar has been happening in Mexico. Time reports, quote, U.S. government allowed the Mexican Sinaloa drug cartel to carry out its business unimpeded between 2000 and 2012 in exchange for information on rival cartels. That's according to an investigation by El Universal. Dr. Edgardo Buscalia, a senior research scholar in law and economics at Columbia University, says that the tactic has been previously used in Colombia, Cambodia, Thailand, and Afghanistan. Quote, of course, this modus operandi involves a violation of public international law, besides adding more fuel to the violence, violations of due process and human rights, end quote. A former U.S. ambassador, Miles Frachetti, ambassador to Colombia, said while the problem of drug trafficking in Colombia persists, the tactic of secret agreements has managed to reduce it. Has it? Just the opposite. Between 2006 and 2007, a major surge in violence in Mexico was in process, 85,000 dead. But the El Universal investigation is the first to publish court documents that include corroborating testimony from DEA agents and a Justice Department official. Quote, according to the notion, the deal was part of a divide-and-conquer strategy where the U.S. helped finance and arm the Sinaloa cartel through Operation Fast and Furious in exchange for information that allowed DEA and FBI to destroy and dismantle rival Mexican cartels. Quote, under that agreement, the Sinaloa cartel, through Leola, an individual, was to provide information accumulated by Mayo, Chapo, and others against rival Mexican drug trafficking organizations to the United States government. In return, the United States government agreed to dismiss the prosecution of the pending case against Leo, not to interfere with his drug trafficking activities and those of the Sinaloa cartel, to not actively prosecute him, Chapo, Mayo, and the leadership of the Sinaloa cartel, and not to apprehend them, end quote. So, we were supporting, arming, and protecting a major criminal organization. Why isn't this discussed, and why aren't these people held accountable? Thank you all for listening. And tonight, on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we're going to take a real look, an honest look at what's happening in the Middle East, in Iraq, and from a different perspective. Have a nice day, everyone.